suggested it was that way. There are.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development this March 25th of 2015. We have a rather full agenda today, so I think we'll start right out by announcing that HJM 5 is going to be held over until Monday, I believe, Mr. Brennan. That will fit on our schedule for Monday. The first order of business today is a public hearing on House Bill 2240, and I think Mr. Brennan will give us a little overview.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2240 has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. It creates a joint interim legislative committee to review economic development programs in Oregon. There's no amendments before us. We have received a statement of no revenue impact, but with a referral to Ways and Means, we won't receive a fiscal impact statement until we're ready to work it.
Thank you very much. Representative Davis, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It's my pleasure to be here today to testify in support of House Bill 2240, which would create the Joint Legislative Committee to review economic development programs in the state of Oregon. Frankly, as a result of sitting on this committee now for the third session, if you include the short session in a row, it struck me from the very beginning that we have a number of economic development incentive programs in the state, and many of them are housed in Business Oregon. I think they do a very good job much of the time, with their economic development activities. But we also have a number of economic development incentives that we run as a state that come in various forms in other agencies. There have been efforts for many years now. In fact, this identical bill, I think this is the third long session in a row that it's been proposed, I think in this identical form and in various other forms for many, many sessions. This idea came from my senator, actually, to run this bill. And the intent would be to, over the interim, have a committee whose sole purpose is to examine and identify the economic development programs that we run as a state, to seek ways to coordinate them, to best use taxpayer dollars, and to make those economic development programs most effective. I think in the rush of session, with nearly 3,000 bills to consider, even a full committee like this tasked with economic development, we all know how busy it can get, and we think of individual ideas as being good ideas, but sometimes we don't have the opportunity to step back. I do want to thank Business Oregon for bringing a few items to my attention and to my staff's attention, which I will post to OLIS. They're not posted for the moment. I forgot to have my staff send them. One is a 2013 report from the governor's office about economic and community development alignment plan for state services, and the other is from 2008. It's a budget note from Business Oregon on incentive programs in and funds. So there have been, I think, some brushes with this. We've had executive agencies taking a look at it. But in terms of legislators examining the way that we spend our dollars and our budget on this would be a wise enterprise. So it would be an interim committee. It would not just be a task force. So it would have some of the requirements of public notice or public participation that committees do and task forces do not. But I think this could be a great opportunity to take a comprehensive look at what sometimes seems like the spider web of competing but also complementary economic development programs in the state. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions for Vice Chair Davis. Representative McLean.
Would this also include really looking, since you said efficiency and trying to make, you know, the best use of the tax dollar, would this also be looking at not just the potential but also for either reorganization or how to update or renew the tool to make it fit today's conditions more or businesses more?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative McLean, thank you for that question. Absolutely. I mean, that is a primary focus, is to determine the effectiveness and realign, potentially make recommendations in a long session, have a few years to make recommendations for changes in our programs or our agencies or our economic development incentives to make them more effective.
All right. Any other questions for Vice Chair Davis? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will. Is there anyone else that wanted to speak to this bill? We are on.
Oh, the hordes are waiting outside.
2240.
Call me.
You have a tour bus.
I see not a movement.
They're all waiting.
You have one.
Ms. Weiser, did you want to comment on this?
I thought someone else was going to be here to do so.
Do you mind putting her name on here? All right. We don't have your name on the list, so Patrick will add you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. For the record, Jody Weiser with Tax Fairness Oregon. Thank you, Chair McCowan.
McEwen.
McEwen. I'm sorry, I knew that.
Happens all the time.
So I think this is a really sensible idea, and we don't often do it, and things have changed a lot. And just getting ready for the gain share hearing, I did some examination and found this that I really hadn't realized before. If, for instance, so when Facebook went to Prineville, they had a choice. They could ask for a rural enterprise zone, which is a 15-year tax-free exemption, or they could ask for a rural SIP. And they asked for a rural enterprise zone. In the negotiations, they agreed to pay $110,000 a year for 15 years. So they're actually paying more than they would have to pay. It comes in as a fee, so nothing goes to the school funding formula. So if we didn't have that device, and we probably did not imagine projects that cost $210 to $2 billion happening in rural Oregon when we wrote the rural enterprise zone, they would be paying for a rural SIP. The payments that they would be making would be 9 times higher if they met the requirements of the rural SIP than what they have agreed to with the enterprise zone. And it would not be payments that would be bankrupting Facebook. The same kind of differential in Google. Google is paying more. They agreed to pay more in the DALs than Facebook agreed to pay. But it's all in given. We've decided to do this kind of thing. But under a rural SIP, they'd be paying 3 times more. And the other thing I discovered is that if you get that rural enterprise zone, you also become eligible for a number of income tax subsidies that are fairly automatic and can be like $2 million a year. And so it's like we should really know what these things are doing and think about them in light of the kinds of businesses we're getting now. Another place I saw this, and this is just looking at the programs that are property tax exemptions and what goes with them. And, of course, we have many other programs that support businesses. Basically, if you have a SIP agreement, you top out at a certain point. So a wind farm that costs $200 million is going to pay about the same taxes as a wind farm that costs $900 million. And that doesn't seem quite right either. And so I think it would be a very good idea for us to be looking at this when we have time to think about it.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Anyone else? I will close the hearing on House Bill 2240. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3104. And I will, I believe, pass the gavel to Vice Chair Gorsuch, because I'm going to come down and testify on this bill.
It's one of those days.
It's a busy day. Director Forsyth, would you like to join me?
Mr. Chair, should I give us a quick brief summary?
Yes, please do.
Summary. So, Bill, House Bill 3104 authorizes ports to acquire and operate telecommunications and infrastructure facilities. We have a Dash 2 amendment, which I believe our esteemed chair will be speaking to.
Okay. And you may select the order in which you'd like to go.
Thank you, Vice Chair Gorsuch, Vice Chair Davis, members of the committee. My name is Katty McEwen. I represent House District 9 over on the South Coast. And I'm here just to introduce this bill, and then I will let Director Forsyth explain the details of it to you. A number of months ago, when I was up visiting my constituents in Florence and visiting, of course, the port in Florence, there was discussion of a project that they were interested in looking into. And as the project moved forward and the idea began to take shape, an issue came up about whether the port actually had the authority to enter into this potential project that had to do with telecommunications. This is a really very simple bill. All it does is add to a very long list of economic development opportunities that ports can enter into, a very long list. It just adds telecommunications into it. There's a Dash 2 amendment that came about in conversations with some folks in our telecommunications industry who I may want to speak to the Dash 2 amendment today, that just clarifies that these are small rural ports, and it narrows down the focus a little bit to our actually the smaller ports. And on that, I'm going to turn it over to Director Bob Forsyth, who's here to tell you a lot more about the details of what the potential is for this to move forward and why the ports are supporting this as just one more tool in their potential for economic development. Thank you.
Thank you. Robert Forsyth. I am the director of manager of the Port of Siuslaw in the city of Florence, Oregon. We're about centrally located, for those of you that haven't come to our beautiful city and enjoyed our port and our facilities there. We have we don't know that this project will ever take place. Let me tell you that right off. But what we, in discovery of what we need to do in case this project were to happen, we discovered that our legal counsel had some concerns with the way ORS 777 was written and sees that document as a tool that tells us what it is we can do and not as a guide of the types of things we can do. So my first thought was, wait a minute, if our legal counsel is concerned and they may not be able to support us if we were to go ahead with this project and something went wrong, then it's probably not the thing we should be doing immediately. So I contacted Representative McEwen, and we started talking about it, and there are many things within ORS 77 that we're allowed to do. We're allowed to do virtually everything, but telecommunications, high-speed fiber, obviously are not one of those things that were in existence when a lot of this was written. The Port of Siuslaw was established in 1909 as a municipality, pretty much logging and fishing and some water commerce were the big drivers at that point in time. Come the 21st century, with the reduction of logging, fishing, we've turned into, like a lot of small coastal ports, we're relying on tourism, recreation, and then whatever other projects that we can get into for the lands that we happen to own within our district that we have control over. This bill adds on the term telecommunications, high-speed fiber, that to a long list of things that we're allowed to do, and those things, the few of those things that reach out beyond our district. For instance, pipelines. I think you'll find that under Dash 273. It allows us to enter into contracts with companies that own and operate these pipelines. That obviously goes and railroads, and that goes obviously beyond our districts and the land that we own or the land that we can taxing district. Not that we run them, not that we want to get into the telecommunications industry, we don't, but we want to be able to support those companies that come to us and want to use our land or our district to run it. Let's, for instance, if they landed high-speed cable on our property in Florence, they could run that high-speed cable all the way to the I-5 corridor where the big users of that high-speed cable would be. If you take the strict reading of 777 right now, we could take them almost to Mapleton and we'd have to stop because we don't have that authority to go outside. At least our legal counsel says we don't have the authority to go outside of our district. So we just want clarification in the telecommunications side of the same type of industry as pipelines and utilities, that and we don't want to be the end user of it. We want to be able to partner with these companies should they come to us and help them get to that larger population that's really going to utilize their tools. If you think about what cable companies and things have had to do over the years of burying cable, you know, it costs them hundreds of thousands of dollars to go down the different highways and even through our town. If you landed the cable on our property out of the river from the ocean, you've got a direct shot down 126, possibly working with Coos Bay and their railroad. I mean, it gives us all sorts of opportunities. So we're looking for that. You know, we operate our port with $220,000 of taxpayers' money on a $1.4 million budget. It's a little tricky. And we have to have different revenue streams, and should a project like this come up, we've been asked a couple times if it's possible. We just want to be able to take the opportunity and do so if that opportunity shows up.
Thank you, Director Forsyth. Any
thank
questions?
You.
Sounds straightforward.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank
we have
you,
some
Madam
other
Chair.
People signed up to testify on this bill. I'd like to call up Barb Young and Brant Wolf. And do you all three want to come up together? And Renee Weiler? Great. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today, and thank you for helping us work on that issue. In any order you choose.
Sure. Brett McEwen.
Thank you.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Barb Young. I'm the legislative director for CenturyLink. And yes, we have been working on this. We were opposed to the bill as it was originally written, as it was incredibly broad. And even though Port of Sayula doesn't have any intention of getting in the telecom business, we felt the way it was written, it would provide the ability to do so. So we've been working on the Dash 2 amendments to try to kind of narrow the scope a little bit so that we would be able to be okay with this bill. And that's where we are right now. We've made incredible progress, and Cassina's been amazing, and you need to keep her, please.
She's blushing. Thank you.
She's been great to work with, and again, we've made really good progress. I can tell you where CenturyLink's at with this. I have done this basically on my own without any attorney review, so right now the next step is just to have a quick corporate look at it to do the check, because they don't like me going rogue. So that's what I'm in the process of doing right now. But we've incorporated a couple of things, kind of clarified that that the telecom is for either the port's own use or to provide wholesale services. We kind of use the Washington statute as a model. Washington has a very similar statute in place to allow their ports, smaller rural ports again, to have this kind of tool in their toolbox for economic development. So we added a little bit of language around that. We also added some language with regard to eminent domain to protect us from the fact that we do have facilities on ports in Oregon now, and we didn't want to risk some sort of, you know, condemnation on our facilities to acquire them. It's the acquire word that makes us nervous. So we've got some language in there with regard to that. So I think we're making progress. And again, I appreciate the patience in doing so. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association, and our association consists of providers of telecommunication services of all sorts, except wireless, throughout the state of Oregon. So, Madam Chair, I signed up as opposed to the bill. We had some concerns with this as it was originally written, as Barb has indicated. Being respectful of the work that's gone on, we're trying to get to a position of neutral on this. We don't want to oppose this bill or what anybody's trying to do. My testimony is I was a little surprised that this bill was needed. There are ports throughout the state that are already doing this, so we kind of thought it was unnecessary to begin with anyway. Moving beyond that, I was a little nervous about the use of the word acquire. I didn't know if that would mean perhaps using powers of condemnation to kind of take over something that maybe we wouldn't want to have taken over. I think this Dash 2 satisfies my concerns in that regard. And beyond that, I think I'll just agree with what Ms. Young has already said, that we're trying to get to a position of neutral, and we'll be as helpful as we can in that regard. So
thank you.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, my name is Renee Willer, and I represent Frontier Communications. We serve customers in the suburbs of Portland, and we also serve the South Coast from Gardner all the way down to Brookings. So Port of Coos Bay is in our district, and we too had...
And my home carrier. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
A landline user, yes.
I just wanted to reiterate, appreciate the conversations that we've had in regards to this bill and the amendments that have been worked on through my colleague, Barb, at CenturyLink. I, too, am in the same position where I just saw the Dash 2 amendments around lunchtime, so I haven't really had an opportunity to discuss it with anyone else in my company, and I'd like to have the opportunity to do that. I had a concern about the language in Section 1 about within and without the parameters of the port district, and I wasn't quite sure what the intent was with that, when we're limiting it to not providing service to end users. So I want to go back and have someone take a look at that again, but certainly I, too, my company, would like to get to neutral on this, and so we'll continue working on it.
All right.
Thank you. And thank you for being our customer. Appreciate it.
Questions for this panel? All right. Thank you very much for being here. And Mr. Forsyth happens to be in the audience. If you have direct questions you might want to ask. Mr. Landauer, we have one more witness for this bill.
Good afternoon, Chair McEwen, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Public Ports Association. Our association represents 23 public ports in the state of Oregon. That's all 23 public ports. Our membership is diverse in size and geography. Our members stretch from the port of Brookings Harbor down just above the California border, north to Astoria, and then 190 river miles east along the Columbia River to the port of Umatilla. Together, our ports employ directly, indirectly, and induce approximately 110,000 jobs in the state of Oregon, providing $600 million in state and local taxes. We are supportive of House Bill 3104. It has been already articulated by Mr. Forsyth that ports are generally limited to the authorities that the legislature provides. Special districts, of which ports are a special district under statute, are created and are animals of the statute, if you will. You have created them, and we are limited in our authorities by what you have given us. So the current statute does not really talk about telecommunications in the port statutes, as Mr. Forsyth had mentioned. We are allowed to generate electricity, for example. But we are not allowed to distribute it to end users. We can sell it to the other utilities that are allowed to be the provide electricity to end users. I have not had the opportunity to share the Dash 2 amendments with our legislative committee. I will do so very quickly, just to ensure that we're not creating some problems, because it was mentioned that, and I am aware of one port that does dabble in this, if you will, and I want to ensure that we're not creating any problems there, and I'll get back to you very shortly, but certainly are supportive of the concept to allow us to explore other economic development opportunities, and so by and large, we'd certainly be supportive of the intent behind the measure, and with that, I'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Landauer.
Thank you.
Anyone else interested in speaking to House Bill 3104? Then I will close the hearing on House Bill 3104 and open a hearing on House Bill 2281. Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2281 in its original form was a placeholder. It was one of our uniform speed bump placeholders. And as much as Mr. Witte would like to talk about speed bumps, I believe he's here to speak to the Dash 1 Amendment. The Dash 1 Amendment makes issuance of fuel tax exemption emblems under the road usage charge program optional and deletes the requirement that mileage of vehicles participating in the road usage charge program be rounded up to the next whole mile. Those are two technical changes. Because this is just a public hearing, we do not have fiscal revenue impact statements on the dash ones, as you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And for our new members, this is not a new project. This has been around now. And Mr. Witte, if you'd like to come up, I think you could give us some sense of how many years now we've been working on this project. And I don't need you to go into as much detail as you have in the past, but we do have some new folks on the committee who might want to know just a tad about why this speed bump bill has been amended.
Chairman McEwen, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Witte. I am the manager of ODOT's Office of Innovative Partnerships and Alternative Funding. To your question, Madam Chair, the state's been working on this since 2001. There was a legislation passed by the legislature, and then House Bill 2453, that directed creation of the Road User Fee Task Force, and there are some members of that task force sitting with you behind the dais.
How many do we have? Two or three?
And it also directed ODOT to investigate pilot programs on an alternative types of revenue for the road system. The task force ultimately settled on a per-mile road usage charge as the type of revenue system that might replace the gas tax in a way that would be effective. And so we're now, all these many years later, working on a pilot program for 5,000 volunteers, which will implement a fully operational road usage charge program. And that legislation was adopted by the legislature with near 80% majority in both houses in 2013. So the amendment today is simply to take a couple of technical corrections that we discovered when trying to implement that 2013 bill. To make it easier and but still maintain the legislative intent.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Representative McLean, did you have a question?
Well, I actually read it on, so thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time to tell me the history.
Okay. And if you'd like to join the pilot, you can speak to someone from ODOT, and I think about July they'll be operational, is that correct, with the pilot program?
Madam Chair, on July 1st, we'll go operational. Mm-hmm. And at that point, we will be accepting volunteers for the 5,000. Right. I think we have one, at least one I know of from behind the dais.
We have one.
So far.
Any other questions for Mr. Witte? All right. Thank you, Mr. Witte. Appreciate you being here today. It'll be fun to see this up and running. I will. Anyone else want to speak to speed bumps? I will close the hearing on House Bill 2281. And I will open a work session on House Bill 2437 and ask Mr. Brennan to give us a little update on what this one's
for. Ask for just a brief recess.
Yes. We will stand at ease for a moment. I need to get my Olus isn't working, but I don't think there's anything complicated here. I need to see.
This is okay. That's what I always do.
437. Let's see if
it's all good. I'm in the minority. I'm in the minority.
See, my hair is dark when I start.
There's also a minority on our side.
Look what it does to you.
Call this hearing back to order. Thank you all. Olus is not responding quickly here, so I will fuss with this as we move along. I would like to open a work session on House Bill 2437. And Mr. Brennan, if you would just give us a brief overview.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2437, we heard this on the 9th and 8th, on the 9th and 18th on the 9th of February was the first time we heard this bill. It authorized the Oregon Business Development Department to enter into agreements for loans, grants, and other assistance, including but not limited to direct purchases of goods or services related to entrepreneurial and industrial development. It has an emergency clause that would take effect upon signature by the governor. We do have in hand a dash one amendment. The dash one amendment deletes the word loans from it, so it would only apply to grants and other assistance. With the dash one amendment, there is no fiscal impact or no revenue impact to the measure. The measure has no subsequent referral, so it'll be going straight to the floor should the committee decide to take action on the amendment.
Thank you. Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the HB 2437-1 amendment dated 2/20 of 2015.
Representative Gorsuch moves to adopt House Bill 2437-1 amendment dated 2/20/15. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, is there any objection? If not, the amendment is adopted. Representative Gorsuch.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move HB 2437 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Gorsuch moves House Bill 2437 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Is the fiscal act for this? I assume there's no.
Yeah, but there's a no fiscal impact statement. I have the hard copy with me.
Okay, but
to know we didn't
posted.
Put it to always, yes.
Okay, got it.
If I may, Madam Chair, for future reference, if there's any fiscal besides a minimal or a no fiscal, we'll post it to always. But with a minimal or no, I have a hard copy for the committee's review, if they wish, with me. Otherwise.
Would you like to see that, Vice Chair?
I trust Patrick.
Okay. Thank you.
And so it begins.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hack?
Yes.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative Davis?
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Bentz?
Aye.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Chair McKeown?
Aye. Yeah, well, the motion passes. Would someone like to volunteer to carry this to the floor?
I'd love to.
Thank you, Vice Chair Gorsuch. Vice Chair Gorsuch will carry.
He beat me to the punch.
Oh, sorry.
Hey,
did you want it? No, John, if you want.
Want is the wrong word.
Gotcha. I hear
happy
you.
Happy to serve my constitutional duty.
We'll have plenty of time. Okay.
Oh,
thank
my
you.
Goodness.
So I will officially close the hearing or the work session on House Bill 2437 and open a work session on House Bill 2643. Once again, Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2643, we heard this back on March 13th. It authorizes the designation of enterprise zones for electronic commerce, among other changes that are listed in the staff measure summary. We have, and I believe we had at the time, the Dash 1 amendment, which makes numerous language changes and clarifications. They're essentially technical amendments, which I believe the committee has any questions. The department is prepared to speak to any questions the committee may have about the Dash 1 amendment. Otherwise, with the Dash 1 amendment, the measure has a minimal fiscal impact, and Legislative Revenue Office has issued a revenue light statement, so this measure has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
Could we just get a brief redux from Biz Oregon on the bill and the amendment, just real briefly, summary of what it does?
Certainly. Gentlemen, thank you for being here in the wings this afternoon. We appreciate your being here.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Ivo Trema, Legislative Affairs Manager for Business Oregon. With me is Art Fish, our specialist on tax incentives and enterprise zones. We'll turn it right over to him because he is the specialist here.
Yeah. So thank you. Stay right here, Ivo.
It's a two-man show. We get that. Thank you, Mr.
Again,
Fish.
For the record, my name is Arthur Fish. I'm the Incentives Coordinator for the Oregon Business Development Department, otherwise known as Business Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity, Chair McKeown and members of the committee, to address this bill. It's a very interesting endeavor, and I've enjoyed very much working with the sponsor of the bill, Representative Lively. To Representative Davis's question, the bill as it is has, I think, kind of four substantive things that it does. One is it would remove the cap on overall amount of designations available for designation for, by, or whatever, you know, of cities, ports, and counties. Okay, there are other tribal designations and other types of zones out there, but for those thing right now we top out at about 67 of those, 66 of those, plus a couple tribal ones at the moment, and this would take the cap off of that, so we could go wherever. I'm not sure how much is left out there, how much more fresh ground, and because economic requirements and other things would still remain. Okay, so you know I'm not we're somewhat comforted by, you know, in terms of workload, by the notion that, you know, I mean, how much more can you do? you know, and most of these cover a lot of the industrial land in the places where they're economically allowed and that sort of thing. The other thing would be that technically our director, who has been doing that since 1993, before that it was the governor, would no longer designate the zones. In fact, the local governments would, in the future, designate the zone, but, you know, they would still submit to us on a sort of whenever type of scheduling, which is very convenient, you know, and we wouldn't have to do rounds and stuff like that. But we would still be administering the same kind of requirements, you know, as far as how big it can be and, you know, consultation with local districts and that sort of thing. Similarly, it would say, though, I don't know what, you know, that for e-commerce designations, which are overlays to those, that they could be done also. There we get into, you know, how do we do a first come, first serve when we don't have an unlimited supply? There's only 15 allowed. And so we'll see how that works out. That's more for an income tax credit, by the way. And then the other thing related to that income tax, not the income tax credit, but actually how electronic commerce personal property is treated, is that you wouldn't have to be in only those 15 for that personal property to be exempt at a lower cost threshold. Well, I know. That's a.
That was clear, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know.
is there a clarification?
Come again?
Yes. Presently, personal property, movable items of property, have to cost either $50,000 or be used in the production of tangible goods to qualify for the standard 3 to 5 year exemption. We could go into why, but, you know, we won't. It's also allowed that they cost as little as $1,000 if they're used for e-commerce in an e-commerce enterprise zone, 15 out of 60-some zones. This would say that that's true in any enterprise zone. So it would help e-commerce investments in go forward because they have these servers that are, you know, not so much so expensive. And they could qualify, and so you could have more potential data centers interested in other enterprise zones. Still wouldn't get that income tax credit that goes with the e-commerce zones, but nevertheless. So those are the four things. And, you know, we worked with Representative Lively, and there were some things that we just thought, you know, could be unintended consequences, could create technical snafus, just weren't as kind of clean and clear and administrable as we would recommend. And so, before things got really busy, developed, you know, a fairly thorough cleaning up and just make sure that everything is on a clear board and we can proceed with this with minimal impacts.
Question?
Yes, Vice Chair Davis.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for the overview. That's extremely helpful. What are the, other than the set number in statute, which this cap lifts, mm-hmm. or we lift that cap with this bill, what are the broad requirements for enterprise zone and for e-commerce zones? So the other certifications that are required in order to designate the zone.
Okay. Well, I'll get Representative Davis, Chair McEwen, members of the committee. E-commerce is a little different.
Yeah.
I can get into that second, I suppose.
Yeah.
But for a regular enterprise zone that would be designated by or presently for a city, county, or port sponsorship, the requirements that we look at come down. I mean, first of all, there have to be resolutions adopted by the sponsoring entities, as well as potentially some jurisdictions that choose not to sponsor among those three types, but they consent to it. So there's that. As part of the process, they would need to, and we would probably maintain more or less this, that, you know, they consult with local taxing districts, holding, you know, a good public meeting at which they can all come and say, express their desire or lack of desire for that designation. Then there are distance and, you know, area. You know, the law says they, you know, a rural zone can be no more than 15 square miles, and it can have, you know, it can be only so spread out, and there are certain parameters, and they get pretty wide already. I mean, we can get all the cities in Malheur County in the same enterprise zone, as things speak. Well, maybe not Adrian, I don't know. You know, as the crow flies, you know, 25 miles gets you pretty far. So it works pretty well, and they get a little tighter as you get into the urban areas, okay? And then finally, are some economic hardship measures. And mm-hmm. You know, it's not the hardest of measures. It's not the poorest of the poor, but it does kind of exclude the richest of the rich. And you look at census data or city data or count. Well, I mean, it's most of it comes from the census, and there are several alternatives. You can look at income being so low. The statutes leads with 80% of the state average. Unemployment being 2 percentage points higher, we can also by rule have allowed to look at poverty rates and that sort of thing. So those are pretty much the four things that come into play, and boundary changes have to conform to certain things. E-commerce, there really isn't any. Even as the law stands now, it's really just limited to the 15. We've at times when we've had only one or two available, we've looked to have, by administrative discretion, which this bill wouldn't allow anymore, we've thought to look for a ready business that could maybe get the thing rolling when it happened. And when there's been several allowed by the legislature, we do a beauty contest and we have them, respond to issues like how great they could make use of it. Not a perfect solution, but when you have a limited supply, you do the best you can. Here, we're gonna just have to kind of set a race if there's ever one available, and see who gets to the finish line first.
And all 15 are full right now.
Yes.
Okay.
And they may only become available when the underlying zone terminates, and we'll work on we'll look at how much is an undue advantage to the current holder to keep it or not. But I don't know what you can do.
Representative McLean.
This is kind of an aside question. It's not directly, probably related to the information that you just gave, but it mm-hmm. is, I think, in philosophy and sort of foundation on it.
Mm-hmm.
For one area, we've chosen 15 as being, the cap and mm-hmm. an important cap. And then the other area, we're really opening it up.
Yes.
Really opening it up. And so I guess what kind of analysis has been done overall on what we think the change of this piece of legislation would do to the taxing abilities that basically support the schools in both either property tax and or income tax?
Okay. Representative McLean, Chair McEwen, members of the committee. It's a good question, and I was I'm somewhat, that depends on Legislative Revenue Office, and I believe the committee administrator reported that they're not seeing a great deal of impact, if I'm not mistaken, or it's preliminary at the moment. But that's why it goes to the department or the Committee on Revenue, and they'll ask for my input, I suppose. And I'm not sure. I don't think lifting the cap mm-hmm. on the total number of enterprise zones is going to be that impactful, because I feel, and I can't prove this, I can't tell you every corner of the state, but as far as areas that can qualify, might be interested and have any decent industrial land and capacity for major investment, I don't see major investments that might not otherwise be in one of our existing enterprise zones and have a really major, small businesses and stuff. That's, it's really not, it really doesn't amount to much, but it's good stuff. I mean, it's not that we don't like to do that. But as far as the property tax impact, the income tax impact is really nothing, because we're not changing the one thing that involves that e-commerce tax credit or anything else that would. So that's been why you have that 15 cap number. As far as a greater allowance for personal property that the bill would have for e-commerce type thing in more of the zones, I've thought about that and juggled the numbers, and I could see where there could be significant value, but how much it would add up to in terms of actual property taxes at 1 to 1.5%, probably not a whole lot, but I leave that up to Legislative Revenue to figure that out, and the department and the Committee on Revenue to mm-hmm. obviously look into that.
Well, I see the value of these enterprise zones, and I'm not saying that I don't understand that. I'm just saying that everything impacts everything that, And so I think it's important to at least acknowledge that and make the query. And so thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Representative McLean.
Thank you.
Are there questions for these gentlemen? I think we're complete. Thank you so much for the update and the refresher course in answering our questions.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe we are looking for a motion. Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the HB 2643-1 amendment dated 3/19/2015.
Vice Chair Gorsuch moves to adopt the HB 2643-1 amendment dated 3/19/15. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, is there any objection? If not, the motion amendments are adopted. Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Madam Chair, I move HB 2643 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Vice Chair Gorsuch moves House Bill 2643 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and be referred to Revenue. Is there any discussion? Yes.
If I could just say, Madam Chair, I want to thank Art and the Department for their work on the amendments in specific to unintended consequences, because this is a bill that's been around, or a program that's been around a long time, and so things have added to it and changed as we've gone over time. And so it was, when drafting it and I went through and read it, I read the pieces that I was trying to accomplish, but certainly couldn't read the others. And so I appreciate the work they did. I think we cleaned up quite a few things in there that have built up over the years. So I just wanted to acknowledge that work.
Thank you for your work, Representative Lively. Is there any further discussion?
And comment?
Yes, Vice Chair Davis.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much again to Business Oregon and Art for testifying today and explaining the bill again. I'm very supportive of bringing control back to some of the local jurisdictions with respect to this bill. I want to thank Representative Lively for bringing it. I think there are some perhaps technical issues and concerns we'll have a chance to vet in the Revenue Committee. So a couple of us on this committee look very forward to doing that down there. So
thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hatt?
Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative Davis?
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Bentz?
Aye.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Chairman McKeown?
Aye. The motion carries. And Representative Lively, would you? Oh, I'm sorry. Going to Revenue. At a later date.
Yes.
At a later date, we will look forward. Yes. Thank you, everyone. I will now close the work session on House Bill 2643. We're going to move House Joint Memorial 5 to Monday, and we will now open a work session, on Senate Bill 482 and turn to Mr. Brennan again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Senate Bill 482, we heard this just last week. The measure authorizes OBDD to appoint a Pacific Northwest Manufacturing Partnership Advisory Committee to advise the Department regarding the partnership and manufacturing economic development within the Willamette Valley and the Columbia Valley Corridor. This measure has no amendment. I didn't mention the last time it had a Senate floor vote of 30-0. It has minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, Madam Chair.
Thank
and no
you.
Amendments as well.
Thank you, Mr. Brennan.
Clean.
Yeah. Clean.
Very rare.
Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Madam Chair, I move SB 482 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Gorsuch moves Senate Bill 482 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hack?
Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative Davis?
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative
Bentz?
Aye.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Chair McKeown?
Aye. The motion passes. And we will need a carrier for this measure. Do we have a volunteer?
I'll do it.
Vice Chair Gorsuch?
Yeah. Oh, wait. Oh no.
I spoke too soon.
I do note that Representatives Hoyle and Clem are sponsors.
Oh, then, yes. Maybe they should.
Shall we?
Should offer it to Representative Clem?
Yeah.
Let's
do that.
Mr. Brennan, would you?
We can certainly
inquire as to whether Representative Clem would like to carry this.
Right.
We would be more
otherwise,
than happy
sure
to send this his way. If you wouldn't mind taking a moment, Mr. Brennan, we will not be meeting on Friday. This is an in-district day, so all of us will be home. And our meeting on Monday is another agenda that is, I think, getting quite full, and we'll look to Mr. Brennan to talk to us about it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Monday's meeting is going to be colloquially referred to as Bicycle Pedestrian Day. We'll have two bills up that day for public hearing. Representative Avis's House Bill 3255 dealing with bicycle safety reflective / illumination equipment.
And I would like to make a comment. Your emails are being blown
full.
Up right now.
I noticed that. Thank you.
About 300 emails, I think, have come through so far. I won't apologize.
We're holding you accountable
for that. You're definitely welcome to hold me accountable. I am sending all of you the Dash 2 amendments.
Ooh.
which delete all references to reflective clothing or any clothing or any requirement that any cyclist wear anything.
Rep Davis, cyclists don't have to wear clothing.
Yeah, write that down.
So, made by clothing manufacturers.
It is a gut and stuff, full deletion of the bill, and it replaces it with a requirement to simply have a rear red light on your cycle, on your bicycle at night.
Is this
not a reflector, though, right?
Or a light?
Current law requires a reflector.
And this is a light.
And this requires a light, which numerous other states do. We'll also be sending you, committee members, a draft response, should you so choose to use it, to some of these constituent emails that we are receiving.
Our staff will be greatly appreciative.
And again, my
Vice
apologies
Chair Davis.
To our staff, and it will be a good... Yeah, it'll be fine on Monday.
It'll be fine.
I think Vice Chair Davis owes our staff.
Yeah, 313. Oh, really? They're just
but
coming
we will
in
deal
one
with that another day.
So for the rest of the agenda on Monday, we also have Senate Bill 533, which is the motorcycle and bicycle proceeding at red lights. If there's no device that allows them to, that triggers whether the motorcycle or bicycle is on there. We also have work sessions on three bills now. HGM 5 will be rescheduled for Monday.
Okay.
We also have work sessions on 2621, which is the photo radar for the city of Portland.
For Portland.
And also 3035, which is school speed zone flashing lights.
Oh, that's the...
And as well as that, we will get a brief 20-minute informational briefing from several folks that are connected to the bicycle and pedestrian advisory committee that ODOT administers. So they're going to give us a briefing, kind of an overview of kind of what's up with bicycle and pedestrian issues in the state.
Thank you.
Madam Chair,
Vice Chair Davis.
Thank you. On the photo radar bill, have you posted the amendments yet?
We're posting them tomorrow morning, yes.
Okay, so those amendments will be posted. There's at least two amendments. Just
fours and fives.
The fours and fives. Both Rep. Reardon and I worked on those. One would require any revenues that the city of Portland receives to be reinvested back into traffic safety.
Right.
So it can't just be a general fund way to collect. And it would also require the city of Portland to utilize ODOT standard signs for photo radar, which are large. I had some constituents say...
Not little bitty ones.
They're not going to be 2 inches wide, right? These
they
warning
need to be
signs.
The full size.
So
right.
Look for those.
Accountability is a good thing.
Yeah.
Thank you. Anything else for the good of the order?
Well, I think with all the bicycle people coming in, we may need the state police to actually be in the room to provide cover for Representative Davis.
We will acknowledge that with our fine service officers downstairs to make sure that we're all well taken care of. They take very good care of us at all times.
I want everybody to go home and get a good night's sleep.
Oh.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
On that note, we are adjourned.
What a great idea.
On that note, we are adjourned.